the pleasure and the joy of the day to be able to have those here that we've known in the past. One of the blessings of a preacher is to know people in different places and recognize that these are the people we're going to spend eternity with in heaven. So it's really good to be here today. I've tried to impress the importance in times past about passing the gospel from generation to generation. It's a terrible thing when future generations, as the Old Testament says, the generations yet unborn, are not faithful. And you recognize that then from that on, most of those generations yet to be born are not going to be faithful. So it's really important that we pass that torch. And so I've used the Olympic torch as an example of passing the torch from one generation to another. The Olympic torch is somewhat of a dramatic thing when they catch the sunbeam from Mount Olympus and create a fire, and then that fire is carried by torch all the way to the nation where they're going to have the Olympic Games. And it's really important not to drop that torch, but to get it to the place of destination. Well, how much more important is it then for us who are Christians to pass along to generations yet unborn, or to the children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren, all those that we have in touch with, about the gospel of Christ, and have them carry the torch in the next generation? Have to stop and think, what's going to happen when we're gone? Who's going to pick up the torch, and who's going to be carrying the load so the gospel will continue? Well, I thought about that, and I thought about some of the things that we have in the Old Testament where the torch was not passed. Yes, in some cases, the light was put out. Later on, another generation came along and relived with that. And so we're talking about breaking the cycle with a view to look at the generations to come and try to pass along the truth of the gospel. We don't have to be what our ancestors were. That's not a secret to those of you here to recognize that my father was not a Christian and he hated the church. I've dealt with that. And to recognize that there was a generation before him that really didn't know the gospel at all. And then I've tried to ask, how many generations can you go back in your ancestry to recognize that they were faithful Christians and that you're still serving God today? It's important to recognize how we do pass that along to future generations. And so how to overcome poor role models. Things about the Word of God, and we talked about this in class a little bit this morning, how God can help us with His providence and bringing back the faith of the gospel. So I wanted to go back to the Old Testament quite a bit this morning and look at some examples of poor role models and how people, in spite of that, continued faithful to God. What that does for us is to recognize that before you has not been faithful. That doesn't mean that we can't start all over again. We break the cycle of unfaithfulness. So we're talking about Joseph, the son of Jacob, and you're familiar with much of it. I'm not going back to read those scriptures because you're familiar with it. But Jacob did see his father Isaac, and you recognize the Jacob and Esau, and we're still feeling the effects of that dispute right to today, as people in the Mideast are fighting, just like they did years and years ago. Thousands of years that animosity has kept up. And Jacob was part of that deception. And then he played favorites with his wives, Hagar and others, and you recognize that the Bible very plainly states that he had played favorites with the wives. Now, I know that you don't know anything about that because we're not polygamists here in this country. But nevertheless, you recognize that we don't always do exactly as we ought to. And he played favorites with his wife in Genesis 29:30. And then with Joseph, he said, was a child that was old age. He was the favorite. Now, you can look back at the patriarchs. Made their mistakes just like we do today. Some of you may recognize that your mother loved your brother more than you, or something like that. But that was what they did, and Joseph was the favorite of those. Then Joseph's brothers hated him. Now, I remember touching with my brother. But there was a deep hatred that generated because of that favoritism and had its effect in Genesis 37. And while they were out tending the sheep and Joseph came upon them to bring them food and things, they put him in a pit and were debating about how to kill him. Now that's real deep hatred. Well, I see it in the world today. I mean, how many people are being killed even today? So there's a lot of hatred in the world, but it was directed toward Joseph. And they deceived their father by showing them his clothes with blood on it, like an animal had attacked him. And I'm persuaded that his father's grief was very real. So you see this kind of turmoil going on even in the family of the patriarchs. But despite these role models, and that's what Joseph had to look up to. That's what he was reading in that kind of a situation. He had a good and in Genesis 39, it talks about how God blessed him to work and to be blessed in the work that he did when he was first in Egypt, and he had a lot of good help. And then he was abstained from sin. I've always wondered exactly how Joseph had this built into him. That when his father's wife tried to seduce him, he said, "I cannot do this thing." How much it'd be a wonderful thing if we could get our children and grandchildren to have that same kind of attitude. I just can't do that. Doesn't make any difference. Joseph's father and mother were not there. But he had ingrained in him to some degree and somehow that he couldn't do wicked things. And then when he was, and I want to look at the Bible about this. This is one of the greatest things about Joseph. He's one of my favorite characters. Genesis 45. And look at the things that happened. Because of his faithfulness, Joseph was the overlord in Egypt in time of famine. Things of that nature that all came through. And the brothers who had sold him into slavery and brutally killed him are now coming into Joseph's presence and they don't know him. Here he is, the Lord of Egypt, to kill them without any thought. The idea that finally begin to understand what's happening and who Joseph is and how he treats them is just something that sets him apart. He broke the cycle of the kind of stuff that was going on in his family. And there are times when you're going to be faced with temptations and trials in the family or among your kinfolk or things of that nature. It would be a wonderful thing if we just have the attitude that Joseph had such a do what he wanted to do at the first. So chapter 45 of Genesis, beginning verse 3. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph, does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, but they were dismayed in his presence. Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." So they came near, then he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourself because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." He was able to see something greater than what he was understanding. So his brothers, that were all there in front of him, he had the opportunity of vengeance. And can you imagine when he was in prison and suffering the way he was in prison, that he might have had these thoughts about, "My brothers put me here." But it broke the cycle of hatred and it broke the cycle of enmity. And he said, but now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now it is not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and the Lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the lands of Egypt. And so here's this wonderful opportunity he has to have to take vengeance. Now let's go to chapter 50 and verse 15. Chapter 50, beginning of verse 15. Joseph's brothers saw that if their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." Now you remember a little bit earlier, when he first recognized his brother, he went out of the room and he cried. the memories are so deep, and things struck at his heart. He cried in private because now he's seen his brothers again. Now he's in his father's dead, no one to give an account to except himself. And he said that this was something he was doing now in memory of the brothers. So in let me get down to verse 15. Verse 16, so they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, before your father died, he commanded me, saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face. And they said, behold, we are your servants. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? And he gave them a place to live. Now here's a cycle that was true in Isaac's family with Jacob and Esau and now all the brothers of Jacob. And it could have continued. He could have brought vengeance upon those families. And I just wonder if we had been in the same place. When you look at your life and look back at conflicts and look back at times of trouble with your family or your friends, have you always acted like Joseph has? And here's a lesson in the Bible. The Bible tells us these things are written for our learning and for our admonition. And it takes a great person to be able to lift yourself up above the kinds of things that were done to Joseph and to return kindness and greatness and loving care toward those who mistreat you. What a wonderful world to be in this kind of thing. So next time you're on the job or school or somewhere and these kinds of things happen and people treat you badly, try to think about Joseph. And just try to think about what a great man he was and what an example he left us to break the cycle of hatred and enmity. Then we're looking at Hezekiah. His father was Ahaz, a wicked king, in 2 Chronicles 28. You notice I said 2 Chronicles. Last week I said 2 Corinthians. But his father was a wicked king. Hezekiah was a good king. And his work contrasted that of his father. You don't have to be how you're raised. You know, I know all the words if I wanted to curse. I know the places to go if I wanted to get drunk. I choose not to do that. That's the way you are. You've chosen to be here this morning and to serve God. Well, that may not be the way you were raised. It may have been the way you were raised. But the point of it is you're making your own choices. And Hezekiah had that too. The Bible reveals that in 2 Chronicles 28, Ahaz ransacked the temple and closed its doors. Hezekiah opened the temple and made repairs. So he went directly against his father. Now sometimes that's really difficult to do, particularly when your father is the king. But Ahaz sought the gods of Damascus, and Hezekiah took his problems to God in prayer. And they made all the difference in the world. You don't have to be like your environment. We have a bad environment in America right now. Sociologists are telling us we live in post-Christian America. That is, America, as you've heard me say before, is becoming secular, not religious. I had a piece in the bulletin about the people who were the founders of America. And though they didn't understand New Testament Christianity, they had a religious side to them. And they really established principles of righteousness in America and freedom and equity for all. That's being violated today. And immorality has just multiplied in our generation. You can't go to the mall. You can't even watch television without something just bursting on your eyes that you didn't want to see. And the Bible says, the Old Testament, I've made a covenant with my eyes. I don't want to see those things. I don't want to hear that kind of stuff. But it's very difficult to go through life every day with not hearing some bad stuff. But I don't have to be like my environment. I don't have to be like the people around me. And in Hezekiah, you see an example of someone who had an evil father. And you saw his father do wicked things and unrighteous things. But somehow, there was within him a sense of rightness. Do you feel that? Do you have that sense of rightness? Paul, in our Philippians class, told the Philippians he wanted to know that they were faithful whether he was there or not. And that's the way it ought to be. We don't have to have somebody watching us every minute to live right. There's a sense that I want to do right. And like Joseph said when he was tempted, I cannot do this thing. Now, we need to pass that along to our sons and daughters who begin to date. First thing you know, they'll be in the back seat of a car, and they're going to be tempted. And they need to learn somehow to say, I cannot do this thing. How many are doing that today? Not very many. Sin just multiplied in our nation. But I don't have to live that way. It's a matter of choice, and God made me a free will person. And I can look at the problems of the world, and I can recognize I'm not going in that direction. I know that the Bible tells us that many are going through the wide gate. But that gate is not for me and not for you. And so here's Hezekiah, who learned all those things. And then there was another one named Josiah. His father, or grandfather, was Manasseh. And the Bible talks to him that he was worse than even Jeroboam in the evil that he did. His father Amon was even worse. So you've got generations of wickedness. Now, like I say, I know what that is. I can look back at my generations on my father's side and I could be just like them. But I had a godly mother who showed me a better way. And so, you know, you don't have to do what the wicked people around you do. We can choose otherwise. So Josiah, however, and again, how does someone do that? When you've got a father and a grandfather who was wicked the way they were, he did what was right. That's just amazing. And somewhere along the line, I think we've captured that. I want to do right. And I know from experience this church, members of this church, want to do what's right. And so we've made a choice. Yes, I know what that is. I know how to do that. I know how to say that. I know where to go if I want to live that kind of life. But I don't want to do that. And so here's Josiah when he was 8 years old. Can you imagine? When he was 8 years old, somehow he had that sense of doing right. If we can just get our children and grandchildren to have that sense, we're going to die and go off one of these days. But if our children and grandchildren have that sense of right, inward morality, they'll do it even though we're gone. Gone, but they'll still live right. That's what we're trying to get them to see. And so Josiah found the book that was lost, and he renewed the covenant with God and brought all of Israel together to be able to make that. And then they observed the Passover. I say that people out in the tribes really didn't have that deep repentance the way he did. But he was a leading example of what was right. Now come to the New Testament. Here's again a situation of Timothy. Now there was conflict at home. I know there was. His father was a Gentile. His mother and grandmother were faithful to the Lord. But when Paul came and he took Timothy with him, though he was a Jew by birth through his mother and grandmother, he had not been circumcised. Now I know that was a problem for his mother and grandmother because they were Jewish and they wanted him to be right in the covenant with God. But he wasn't allowed that. So I can see in that family some conflict about what was going to be done. And when he left home, he was circumcised by Paul. So you have this situation. Sometimes you have a situation where a father is a Christian and the mother is not. And you have a situation where the mother is not and the father is. And there's conflict. Somehow Timothy chose the wrong way. Isn't that what we wish for our children and grandchildren? I doubt if there's not one. Blessings that we can have, perhaps our children and grandchildren choose. He was pretty young when he was sold into Egypt. Yet he had that sense of rightness. And it changes you. It changes your mind. It changes your life. Because you just want to be right with God. And that's so important to understand that. So Timothy went on to become a great servant of the Lord. He was with Paul through thick and thin, and he wanted Timothy to come to him when he was in prison. And Timothy was his helper and his child in the faith, and there was a great love there. And I would say that probably he felt closer to Paul than he did his own daddy. Because it has meant so much that way. And thankfully, there are people in the church that have the ability to be a father or mother to youngsters in the church because you're just there. You want to do right and you want to influence your children. And you look out for people how you might do good. I'm not going to read all of those passages, but you recognize that in the book of Philippians, in prison, he sent him to Ephesus. And he sent him because he knew that Timothy would do the right thing. They had problems there in Ephesus. And evidently even problems in the eldership from what Paul wrote. And he sent him there because he was reliable. And he would do what's right. I wish we could use. I wish we could have people come in that just love the Lord. Now they may be around us. I want you to be sure that you understand our meetings on the way. It's not going to be far along. I'm going to be doing work for advertising, but it's going to be for each one of you. You're not talking as a full good preacher. And if you want us to tell people about me, and we can be like Josiah, and we can be like Timothy. And so, be thinking ahead. Right with these things and to recognize that all these things are done. So how anyone can overcome poor role models? Joseph has strong faith in God. I really don't understand how he had it, but he saw it somehow in his family and it stayed with him. I know you know that I baptized my brother not too long ago. He's 65. And he brought it up. He wanted me to baptize him. And I said, well, I know you heard me preach, but I didn't think anything stuck with you. He said, some of it did. And you never know. Some of it did. And he was ready to be baptized. And so there's that faith in God that's necessary. Hezekiah served God to the best of his ability, and that's all God requires of you, to do the best you can, and to know that that's the way it ought to be. Then Josiah sought the Lord in his youth. How many young people do you see running riotous today? Drugs and alcohol. A whole generation. We've talked about the lost generation. Well, there's been three or four lost generations. And we're still losing the generations. We don't have a lot of young people here. We may have to lasso Alex and keep him here. But we're glad to see young people here because it's important for the next generation. And Timothy made God's Word his foundation, his life. And that's what makes us different as well. Well, that's pretty much the lesson this morning. There's an entire sense of rightness with God that when you have it, it'll never go away. We've seen some examples of that in bad circumstances. And I don't know what your circumstances are. Where you go to school. About us as peculiar people. And when you see us this morning enjoying worshiping with God, you recognize that a lot of people are not here this morning. And a lot of people will never be here because they don't choose to serve God. But let's be thankful for what we know. Just be thankful that someone, somewhere, taught you the truth. You might have come from that environment. I don't know. But you make your environment today. And you live for the Lord and will go home to glory. If you're here this morning and not a Christian, we'd invite you to become a Christian and act like Joseph and Josiah and Hezekiah and Timothy. Just choose the right place. If you'd like to work and worship with us as a congregation, we'd be happy to receive you and do our work together. And love you. We invite you forward if we can work with you anyway. Come as we stand and sing.